This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Soon after China announced a partial trade agreement with the U.S., their purchases of American soybeans in November jumped higher. November imports jumped to 5.4 million tons, which is almost 54% higher than last year. An Associated Press report says U.S. soybean imports into China more than doubled from the previous month's 2.6 million tons. That number comes from AWeb.com, a news website that serves the Chinese farming industry. China cut off purchases of U.S. soybeans as the trade war with Washington kicked into high gear. While the two countries announced the Phase 1 deal back in October, they haven't released any specific details regarding the agreement. The AP report says U.S. officials now think the agreement could be signed as early as January. As part of the agreement, U.S. officials say Beijing will be buying a lot more of U.S. farm products. However, Chinese officials have yet to confirm how big the purchases will be. Chinese government spokespeople did confirm the importers were already placing orders in September, but didn't give out any details of those purchases. Chinese buyers use a lot of soybeans as animal feed and to crush for their cooking oil. Many farmers across the country are spending time thinking about the potential pitfalls and the possible opportunities that hemp production can offer them. Farm Journal's AgWeb.com says many are taking the leap into hemp production. Colorado farmer Dion Oakes says the hemp is a very promising outlook for farmers as a rotational cash crop that can be very viable for them. Looking ahead to the new year, only four states, including Idaho, South Dakota, Mississippi, and New Hampshire, have not made it legal to grow industrial hemp within their borders. U.S. Hemp Growers Association Executive Director Karen Wilcox says she expects those four states to move toward legalizing it sometime in 2020. Wilcox says farmers will need time to relearn how to grow the crop. She says it will be important to get advice on and counsel from those farmers who have had hemp growing experience. Make sure to source where you need your seed comes from. She also says farmers have to know their state's regulations. Other big pieces of advice is to have a customer lined up before planting your first crop. In other crop news, America's drivers now have a new choice that brings their vehicle needs and sustainability concerns together at a competitive cost. A new motor oil made with U.S.-grown high oleic soybeans is now available across the country, thanks in part to a collaboration and investment of the United Soybean Board. Mike Korth, a USB director and soybean farmer from Randolph, Nebraska, says the motor oil represents a new superior use of U.S. soybeans.
We've always felt that whatever is made out of petroleum oil, we can make out of soybean oil. They came to USB to have some help in funding this, and we've got us a new motor oil.
Partnership between Biosynthetic Technologies and the soybean industry is one of many partnerships fostered through the USB to benefit soybean farmers and other industries, providing a sustainable, environmentally friendly ingredient for motor oil. Korth says this new market will help support soybean demand.
Great to know that what we are growing out here is something that can be used for more than just consumption by animals or such. This is a new high oleic oil, which has been in the testing for a long time. I mean, many, many years. And finally, we're going to get to use something that we've been behind a long time and give us a premium in selling our soybeans as well.
As a thank you, farmers can try the product now on the Biosynthetic Technologies website with a discount available through January 31st by entering the code BIOTRIALFARM.
There's a website you can go to, which is motoroils.biosynthetic.com, and you can get a 20% discount on the oil. And I would encourage all farmers to use this. This is our product that we helped develop. Let's all get on board.
Again, that website is motoroil.biosynthetic.com, and the code is BIOTRIALFARM. Stay up to date with the latest information from the United Soybean Board on Wednesday mornings at 9 a.m. on RFD TV. The Beef Quality Assurance Program is branching out into the beef transportation world. Lori Boyer has more.
The Beef Quality Assurance Program is not new to the beef industry. It's an audit program that is designed to ensure meat quality for both customers and consumers, according to Travis Taylor, Eastern Colorado Livestock Specialist with Colorado State University Extension. But now BQA is starting to not just be implemented in the feed yard, but also in a transport chain.
Through requirements requested by consumers through our major beef processors, and just for example, Tyson and Cargill, are asking that their supplies of beef cattle come from BQA-certified feed yards. And in that, you know, Cargill now requires 90% of their cattle to be sourced from BQA-certified feeders. And they're going to ask that the majority of those now be handled by people that are BTQA, or beef transport quality assurance certified. And Tyson's, as of January 1 of 2020, is asking that all cattle delivered to their facilities be hauled by individuals with the transport certification in BQA.
Taylor says that transport BTQA certifications can be done via certified BQA trainers, either in person or online. Recertifications have to be done every 3 years. He says to contact a local university extension office for more information.
And again, that was Lori Boyer in Colorado. Moving on to state ag news here in Illinois, however, an Illinois farmer has been battling the federal government since 2015 over alleged swamp buster violations. Chad Smith has more on that story.
Brian Bunting bought a farm near Metropolis, Illinois back in 2010 and spent 5 years getting it back in shape for row crops. 5 years later, he received a letter from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service informing him that he had allegedly converted 11 acres of wetlands back into farmland. He says that's when the trouble started.
All my payments and crop insurance subsidies have been withheld. I always thought that the burden of proof laid on the government to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they were right and the accused was wrong. We've got aerial pictures from 1938 showing it clear, and I've got letters from three different neighbors attesting to row crops being on the ground in the 60s and the 70s.
Bunting says the government determination was wrong because the land had clearly been farmed in the past. He went through the appeals process claiming the land should have been grandfathered in under the swamp buster laws.
I didn't feel that I got any justice through the appeals process whatsoever, because I've contended all along that my plot should have been a prior converted cropland instead of a converted wetland, and that the appeals process leaves you with no recourse other than the same folks that have seen the same papers over and over and over again.
Bunting says he is the one in the dispute that has to provide a preponderance of the evidence to prove his case. So far, despite his evidence, the determination of a wetland still remains in effect. He's researched many other cases and found out he's not the only farmer going through a situation like this.
Talking to other folks across the county and across the country that have been through this same situation or one similar to it, I haven't gotten any farm program money since 2014, and now they've cut off my crop insurance subsidies as well. Congress intended for the ground that was being farmed or had been farmed in the past to be grandfathered in under the swamp buster regulations, and that's just not the way things are happening in RCS now.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Moving along into other state ag news, if you're hoping for a longer break from the bitter cold and wetness of last winter, you're not going to like the latest outlook from the National Weather Service. Right now, things are trending towards a repeat of last winter, and Chris Miller with the National Weather Service office in Lincoln says January is looking like a repeat of last year. He says the cold is not far away.
We're seeing a lot of similarities to last year, where December started out mild side, and we didn't really have much in the way of snowfall during the month, which is where we've been so far. Again, you know, we're watching something for next week and later in the month again. But as we get into January, February, March, that is when we are expecting more of our weather systems to be coming at us from the northwest, and that this time of the year means much colder conditions. So yeah, we're still looking for that late winter, colder than normal, a little more in the way of snow and ice precipitation across a large part of the Midwest. You know, we're already seeing it. I mean, we're in the 30s across most of the area here, but we've got portions of the northern plains, northern Minnesota, where they're below zero. So the cold temperatures are not that far away.
And if you're traveling this holiday season back home after Christmas, while it's anticipated to be warmer than normal across Illinois, that doesn't mean there isn't going to be snow or sleet along your route outside of the state. Miller implores travelers to keep tabs on the weather forecast for any area you might be traveling. Moving on now to our local Ag Community Bulletin Board, the University of Illinois Extension will be offering the state-mandated Certified Food Protection Managers class and exam. The Illinois Department of Public Health and Food Sanitation Code requires food service establishments to be under the operational supervision of a certified food protection manager during hours of operation. Certificates need renewal every 5 years, and the class attendance is mandatory to sit for the exam. The two-day course will be held from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Montgomery County Extension Office in Hillsboro on January 30th and 31st. Participants are required to attend both days of class, and the exam will take place on the second day. And they'd like you to please bring a photo ID for identification for the exam. The class will be taught by Lisa Peterson, nutrition and wellness educator with the U of I Extension. The class provides the minimum classroom work to prepare for the National Food Certification Exam. Topics include foodborne illness, safe food handling, cooking and storage, employee health and hygiene, health, facility safety and maintenance, and cleaning and sanitation. They'd like you to register by Thursday, January 16th, and that pre-registration is required because exams need to be ordered prior to the course. You can register by calling the Montgomery County Extension Office at 532-3941 or online at extension.illinois.edu/cjmm. And if you have any questions or concerns, again, the County Extension Office number is 532-3941, or you can email lap5981@illinois.edu. In other Ag Community Bulletin Board events, the Carlinville FFA alumni will be holding their biannual dinner auction at the Carlinville Elks Lodge on Saturday, January 18th. The doors will open at the Elks Lodge at 5:30 in the evening. Dinner will be served at 6:30. There will be a silent auction from 5:30 until 8 and a live auction to be held at 8. Dinner will consist of ribeye or a chicken breast dinner, which will be catered by the Carlinville Elks, and there will also be a cash bar. Tickets are available for $20 for adults. Children 12 and younger will be $15. Tickets are available at the CNB Bank in Carlinville or PJ's Tire, and any Carlinville FFA alumni member also has tickets. If you have any additional information, if you have any questions on additional information, or if you have a donation for the event, you can contact Molly Rosentreter, Ann Stillwell, Kevin Groves, or Matt Slidham. And all these proceeds will go to support youth in the Carlinville FFA chapter, which is celebrating 90 years in 2020. And that'll wrap up this Friday morning edition of the Farm Show. But remember, if you have farm news for us or anything for the Ag Community Bulletin Board, you can email it to us at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So for this Friday morning, December 27th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.